ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भगवद्गीता as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, text 63, fairly well-known verse. Krodhat bhavati sammoha. Sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Smriti bhrangshad buddhi nasho. Buddhinashat pranashyati. Krodhad bhavati sammoha. Sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Smriti bhrangshad buddhi nasho. Buddhinashat pranashyati. Verse translation, from anger complete delusion arises, and from delusion bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Purport, Srila Rupa Goswami has given us this direction. Prapanchikataya buddhya harisambandhi vastunaha mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam phalgu kathyate. By development of Krishna consciousness, one can know that everything has its use in the service of the Lord. Those who are without knowledge of Krishna consciousness artificially try to avoid material objects. And as a result, although they desire liberation from material bondage, they do not attain to the perfect stage of renunciation. Their so-called renunciation is called palgu, or less important. On the other hand, a person in Krishna consciousness knows how to use everything in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he does not become a victim of material consciousness. For example, for an impersonalist, the Lord or the Absolute, being impersonal, cannot eat. Whereas an impersonalist tries to avoid good eatables, a devotee knows that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and that he eats all that is offered to him in devotion. So, after offering good eatables to the Lord, the devotee takes the remnants called prasadam. Thus, everything becomes spiritualized and there is no danger of a downfall. The devotee takes prasadam in Krishna consciousness, whereas the non-devotee rejects it as material. The impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life due to his artificial renunciation, and for this reason, a slight agitation of the mind pulls him down again into the pool of material existence. It is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. Krodhad bhavati sammoha, sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Smriti bhrangshad buddhi nasho buddhi nashat pranashyati. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. This verse is usually read in conjunction with the verse previous to it. It's part of a series. You'll find in these two verses, you'll find several words which end art, krodhat in the verse previously, sangat, kamat in this verse, krodhat. So if you notice this, then you can see whenever this word form appears, you can know that it means from. Sammohat means from sammoha, Krishnat means from Krishna. And so on. So you can learn some elementary or some points of Sanskrit just from this. Also in the word for word translation, sammoha is translated as perfect illusion. Interesting term. Because illusion is by its, it means imperfection. If there's illusion, it means it's not perfect. But here, perfect means complete. It's one of the meanings of perfect. It's an illusion. It's a very good illusion. In as much as it's total bewilderment. There can be levels of bewilderment. It's slightly confused. And the full level of bewilderment, sammoha. Yayasamohita, that term comes again. Yayaso in Bhagavatam. Yayasamohita jiva. Atmanam trigunatmakam. Complete illusion by which the jiva, who is supposed to be, or is constitutionally, full of bliss in Krishna's service, identifies himself with some lump of matter and everything else illusorily, something like that, connected with that lump of matter. In other words, he identifies with the body and everything in connection with it. So that's complete illusion, perfect illusion. So, as this verse is the second of two verses, why am I reading this in particular? Well, particularly, I wanted to speak about the main point that Srila Prabhupada makes in this purport about renunciation. He begins the purport by quoting Srila Rupa Goswami, Prapanchikateya bhudya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam. Palgu katyate, palgu, or modern Indian language is falgu. Falgu vairagya, as opposed to yukta vairagya. Vairagya means absence of attachment or detachment. So yukta vairagya means engaged vairagya. To use everything in Krishna's service. How does that verse begin? Nirbandhe Krishna Sambandhe. How does that begin? Anasaktasya. So that anasakti, that comes first. The attachment, without attachment. Raga, asakti, similar words. Of course, raga can be used in other ways also. From raga comes vairagya, viraga. So anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya muchyate. When one knows the proper use of everything in Krishna's service, then one does not become attached to the objects of the senses. When we're talking about attachment, what is to be detached from? It's to be detached from the objects of the senses. But yukta vairagya means that although one is not personally attached to anything of this world, one sees it all in relation to Krishna and uses that in Krishna's service. Sometimes people think that, well, to be spiritual, you have to be very poor. But it could be that someone can be very rich and very spiritual and very detached. And in the Bhagavatam, we find that many, if not most, of the narrations are about saintly kings. Yudhishthira Maharaj, Dhruv Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj. Maharaj means very wealthy, great king, not just even an ordinary king, great king. And it can be that someone is very poor, they have hardly anything, but they're very attached to it. So it can be that someone has just the clothes on his body, but is very attached to that and has many material desires. Whereas someone may have many material objects known to be his possessions, but is not attached. And the example of that is Bharat Maharaj, who gave up his home, empire, everything else, just as one gives up a stool after passing it. It's not something you think, let me keep it, unless you're going for a medical test or something like that. But it's not in the normal course. One doesn't think, it's mine, I'll keep it. And you might use it, yukta vairagya, for making some compost or slurry for the agriculture. But you don't think it's something I want to keep. So that is yukta vairagya, means to see the relationship with Krishna and use everything in Krishna's service. Then falgu vairagya means the idea of renouncing this world without understanding the connection with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gave an example about this. An example: if someone walks into a bank and declares loudly to everyone that, everybody here, I hereby declare to you that I'm now renouncing all the money in this bank. It's crazy, because it never belonged to him anyway. So you can't renounce it if it doesn't belong to you. But if we don't see the relationship with Krishna, then we see everything in terms of I, me and mine. So we think, this is mine, I can renounce it. And we may say, well, how then did Bharat Maharaj renounce anything if he knew that nothing belonged to him? Well, because he had that attitude. He knew that I'm not actually renouncing. It appears to be that he's renouncing. And in one important sense, he is renouncing. It is more comfortable to live as a Maharaj in many ways, than it is to live in the forest as a recluse and a mendicant. But he thought that anyway, nothing belongs to me. That's why he was able to do it. So the idea that I will just give everything up, this is called Falgu Vairagya. Falgu is the name of a river that flows in Bihar. It flows through Gaya. That's also known as the Karma Narsha River. Generally, if one bathes in a holy river, then one's sinful results of sinful activities are nullified, or at least, yeah, they're nullified. Actually, they're nullified, although the consciousness may not become immediately pure, but the results of karmic activities are nullified. Gangara parasha hoile paschate pavam. Narottam Das sings that by touching the Ganga, the practice of doing that will purify one gradually. And one becomes free from sinful reactions by touching or bathing in the Ganga. But the consciousness may not be, it may take time for the consciousness to actually become purified. The desire, the sinful desires will remain in the heart. But the Karma Nasha River is the opposite. It heaps on sinful reactions. So the Falgu River has another characteristic, unique characteristic, that most of the time you just see the riverbed. Of course, that's become quite common in India now with all the droughts and the damming of the rivers. But it's just some sandy bed. But if you stick your finger in and dig a little bit, you'll find the water's flowing a little bit underneath. So this is compared to the... I'll read that. I got it. in one of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. He explained this. Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse. Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhe vastunaha mumukshubhi parityago phalgu vairagyam katyate. Phalgu vairagya, Srila Prabhupada explains. Mukshubhihi, those who are after liberation, near Beda Brahmanu Sandhana. That should be Anusandhana. It's missing a diacritical mark. They're giving up this world, becoming sannyasi, Mayavadi sannyasi, Brahma Satyang Jagan Mitya. Rupa Goswami says, Phalgu Vairagya. Why Phalgu? Phalgu means insignificant. And Phalgu means there is a river, Phalgu, in Gaya. Those who have gone to Gaya. Did any of you go to Gaya? I don't think. Maybe you went? Yeah. In South India, people don't go. They go to Kumbakonam, I think it is, for the Shraddha and all this kind of thing. Pindadan. Rameshwara. Yeah. In North India, Gaya. On this side of, in Tamil Nadu, they'll go to Rameshwara. Those who have gone to Gaya. There is a river. The Gaya city is situated on the river Phalgu. This river is called Phalgu, because on the bed you'll find only sand, but if you push your hand within the sand, you'll find water. Similarly, Phalgu Vairagya means the so-called sannyasis. They have taken the dress of the renounced order, but within the heart they have got all desires to fulfill, within the heart. If you push your hand within his heart, you'll find he has got all desires for material enjoyment. That is called Phalgu Vairagya. On the surface there is no water, only sand. But within, oh, there is a flow of water going on. So these Phalgu Vairagya Wallas, Mayavadi Sannyasis, Jagan Mithya, they give up the world, so many sannyasis. But at heart there is the desire, I shall become God, I shall become God. Just see. We are trying. The Karmis are trying to become minister and he's trying to become God. So how much great desire he has got, and outwardly he appears to be renounced. So this renunciation of the impersonalists is said to be artificial. Sometimes Phalgu Vairagya is called artificial. And it's not even real renunciation. There's an outward show of renunciation. So we could consider that and see, well, actually there are Mayavadi sannyasis who are renounced, and who are actually renounced. And then maybe there are some Vaishnavas who are not so renounced also. Sometimes we see Vaishnava sannyasis, and they fall into material attachment. It's been quite a prominent feature, you could say, of our movement. Sannyasis not living up to their vows and falling into material attachment. On the other hand, we do see some Mayavadis who appear to be genuinely renounced. Renunciation can come two ways, maybe more, but I can think of just two now. One is that by hearing about and considering the temporary nature of this world, that there's no real happiness in this world, one thinks it's better to be renounced. So he practices renunciation. Knowing that engagement with the sense objects just leads to trouble. What is that verse that states that in Bhagavad Gita? Engagement with the sense objects leads to trouble. Leads to... anyone? Well, yeah, actually, this series of verses here. But there's another one which states that. Prakriti, Purusha Prakriti Stohi. No, I'm thinking of another one. Anyone? Therefore, an intelligent person does not take part in it. Anyone? I'm also forgetting it because I just came ahead two nights in a row on the train and my brain processes aren't working properly. Adyantavanta Konteya. So what's the first line? Anyone? No one? Pretty bad. I have to send you all back to kindergarten. Such an important verse. Well, I'm also not remembering it. Yeah, there you go. Yehi sangsparsha ja bhoga dukhayone evate adyantavanta konteya nateshu ramate buddhaha. Involvement of the senses with the sense objects just leads to distress. Therefore, an intelligent person doesn't take part in it. So that's one way to be renounced. You see, this world is miserable. Okay, I have to control my senses. It means the desire for sense enjoyment is there, but one controls that, knowing that it simply leads to engagement of the senses with the sense objects for the sake of sense gratification, personal sense gratification, leads to distress. You can't stop the interaction of the senses with the sense objects. Unless you want to close your eyes and block your ears. But that's not very advisable. But the aim of trying to enjoy the senses leads to distress, so one becomes renounced. And just accepts the sense objects minimally for bodily maintenance. Another way to be renounced is that rasavarjang rasopyasya parangdrishvarnivartate. One comes to a higher platform of spiritual enjoyment so that one no longer desires material enjoyment. Now it may be that some mayavadis have apparently reached that platform, and one fairly modern example of that is here in Tamil Nadu, Ramana Maharshi. He, from a previous life, it seems, he had some level of realization. As a young man, or what would in India be called a boy, he was, I believe, in his late teens, where he just left home and he went to sit on the side of a hill in Tiruvannamalai. And he just stayed there the rest of his life. And what did he do? Nothing. He just did nothing because he saw that this world, well, there's nothing, what's the point of doing anything? So probably he ate and slept, but he made no endeavor for anything. And he didn't make any endeavor to make disciples or an ashram, but people came to him. And he manifested detachment from the world. Not that he was trying to show off, but he felt, what's the point? Why should I endeavor for anything? It just, everything in this world has no meaning. He didn't even say all of that. Practically, he didn't speak much at all. Because what's the point of saying anything either? Now, when people came, sometimes he spoke with them. But he wasn't interested in preaching or not really interested in anything. But at the same time, he manifested seemed to be very content and spiritually realized. And though he said, I never read the scriptures, but then later when people told me about what's in the scriptures, about Brahman and all this, he said, yeah, okay, that's what I understand, without having understood it all. So he appears to be self-realized. He doesn't seem to have raging desires below the surface, which might be the case with a Vaishnava renunciant. If he's not actually fit for renunciation, he may renounce the world in some sentiment or something like this, but he hasn't really very strongly caught hold of the feet of Krishna. And so he's beset by strong material desires. So what am I doing here? I'm contradicting what Srila Prabhupada said. Is it? Mayavadis, they have so many material desires within their heart. Elsewhere here in the Gita commentary, Srila Prabhupada compares Lord Shiva, the greatest ideal for all renunciants, even though he's a householder, because Prabhupada said that he was attracted by Parvati, and therefore he engaged in, well, he married her and engaged in sexual affairs. Of course, Lord Shiva's sexual affairs are essential for the universe because he injects all the living beings into the universe. So it's not that Lord Shiva's actually in Maya. He's with Maya. His wife is Maya. He's someone who can literally say, "My wife is Maya." Others could do also. Her name might be Maya. But more than anyone, he can say, "My wife is Maya." But he's not victimized by her. Then Srila Prabhupada compares him to Haridas Thakur, who was tempted by a prostitute and then by Maya herself. She also came. But Haridas, due to his attachment to the holy names, he wasn't attracted at all. So he gave initiation to he ended up giving initiation to the prostitute who tried to make him fall down, and Maya, who came to test him, he initiated her also. So that's the example given, but for those who are trying to be renounced but are not really there, it's always a dangerous situation. Although that doesn't mean that one shouldn't try for it. But this point, that the Mayavadis, they have so many material desires, raging material desires underneath. Well, I've given the example of Ramana Maharshi, and there may be many others also who are very beautiful, very renounced from the world. And here in the modern Tamil Nadu also, the very esteemed Mayavadi sannyasi, I've mentioned his name several times, this Chandrasekhar Endran Saraswati, the ex-Matadipati at Kanchipuram, of the, what is that, Kamakoti Matam, Mayavadi. So he was renowned as being very saintly, detached from the world, very principled. But different in some ways. Ramana Maharshi didn't have any agenda at all. He had some agenda, preserve. Chandrasekharendra had some agenda, preserving Hinduism, trying to get the Brahmins to chant the Vedas. I don't think he succeeded very much in that, but he had something to do in the world. Ramana Maharshi, nothing. Just seemed to be completely detached. But Srila Prabhupada, let's get back to the purport that I started with this. This which I read from Srila Prabhupada, he said, underneath they have, although they appear to be very detached from the world, they have this idea to become God. So he said that that's bigger material desire than anyone. Someone, a normal person, they might desire to be a minister. That's a big ambition, to be a minister. But to be God, that's a much, much bigger ambition. So in that sense, they have the biggest desires, more than we could say the most materialistic people in this world. They desire to have lots of money, to be a very big person. Either lots of money or big political post. But to desire to be God, that's taking ambition far beyond anything that anyone can normally imagine. Well, actually, Ramana Maharshi said this. I learned this from Srila Prabhupada. He was very disgusted with this. He commented about Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi, one of the things he was reputed to have said is that man, little mathematics here, arithmetic, man minus desire equals God. Prabhupada didn't like that at all. Because it's not true. It's not a man minus desire equals God. So practically he is, by giving this formula, he has indirectly declared himself to be God, because he appeared to have no desire. Even the Chandrasekharana had some desire to revive Hinduism and all this, but he had nothing, neither material or spiritual. He appeared to be completely devoid of desire. But this idea that, he didn't say, man minus desire equals God, I'm a man, I don't have any desire. Therefore, children, what is it? One plus one equals two. Here's one apple, another apple. How many apples, children? Two apples! Okay, man minus desire equals God. I'm a man, I have no desire. What does that mean? Oh, you're God. I didn't say it. Like this Sai Baba rascal. He never says he's God. He just has recordings playing here and there and everyone praising him as God. I didn't say I'm God. So although they in some sense may be spiritually advanced, in one sense, but on the other hand, they are the biggest rascals, because they have this desire to be God. To be a materialist, that itself is rascaldom. To desire anything but to serve Krishna is rascaldom. But then when you desire not only to be separate from Krishna, but to usurp Krishna's position, or declare oneself to be equal to Krishna, that is very serious rascaldom. So we shouldn't be rascals. Understand, we're meant for serving Krishna. This is our constitutional position. Yuktam vairagyam, the linked vairagya. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took this principle and manifested it in ways that no one had ever done before. We might wonder that Rupa Goswami, who wrote this verse, Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatharham Upayanjataha Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. Rupa Goswami wrote this verse. Rupa Goswami is Tektva Turnama Sesha Mandalapati Shrining Sada Tuchavat Bhuktva Dina Ganesha Ko Karunaya Kopina Kantashrita. Rupa Goswami, he gave up prestige, power, position, fabulous wealth to live in Vrindavan as a renunciant with only Kopin and Kanta. Kanta means a patchwork quilt. Not even any residence. One night one tree, another night another tree. Although sometimes he would live at Nandagram, he would often reside in that area. But he really had nothing. I mean, if you have a little, even that was quite common until recently, over much of India, including this area, that people would live in houses, just get some straw from the rice and put it up and live like. Still they have, but mostly now for cows. But humans used to live like that also. So you can't really say you own it. It's some pieces of straw. It's, of course, people become attached to that also. But Rupa Goswami, he lived a very renounced life, hardly eating. Nidrahara vihara kadi vijito, hardly sleeping, hardly eating. So, how is this that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he made buildings for his renounced followers to live in, had them go in cars. In those days in India, the car is only for a big British official or maybe a Raja, big Raja, very rich people or very prestigious people. And he would send his, even when I came to India, that was in the 1970s, to have a car was a big thing. It means you're a very important person to have a car. Nowadays, yeah, there's so many cars. So he justified that. Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur, he justified that by saying, but we're using it in Krishna's service. We should use whatever is there in Krishna's service. Of course, it's not only that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and the Gauri Amart and later ISKCON are using all these things. We find all the Mayavadis use them also. They go in planes and trains and have cars. I don't know what their justification of it is. We say we're using everything in Krishna's service. What are they doing? Why don't you just sit on the side of a hill like Ramana Maharshi? Or like Chandrasekharendra. He followed the strict rules. If he went anywhere, he would walk. If he was going from Kanchi to Chennai, he would walk. He wouldn't take a car or a train or anything else, which means he didn't travel very much. His successor, Jayendra. He wanted to go to China, and then someone who is connected with that mart, he said, okay, you can go, but you have to walk. If you want to, no Shankaracharya ever, at least not from Kanchi mart, they never used any vehicle. And they wouldn't even ride on a bullock cart. So if you want to go to China, you have to walk. That man eventually got hacked to death. The man who was on his case. I don't know if they ever found out who did it. But what is their justification? If you're supposed to be detached from the world, then why do you use cars and go in planes and use microphones or anything of this modern world? Why don't you just live like the previous? They must have some justification. Anyway, they justify themselves becoming God, so I guess they can justify anything, any preposterous thing. Their whole idea, the Mayavadis, is to become egoless. No more ego. I guess they could say that. Well, if you can use all these things if you don't have any attachment. You don't have any ego. You know, who's to measure that? We have something tangible. It's used in Krishna's service. But for them, it's just, well, first of all, you have to declare yourself free from ego. Then you can do whatever I guess you can dance with young girls also, then, I have no attachment to this, but I'm just doing it anyway. I don't know. Anyway, I won't try to justify this philosophy because it doesn't make any sense at all. Adyantavanta, from the beginning to the end, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So their idea is to become free of egoism, the ahamta, the sense of I. The sense of, sometimes that's called ahankar. The two terms are a little different. Ahamta means the sense of I-ness, and ahankar, that means making, so that which makes one think in terms of I, me, and mine. So it's a little different. There's ahamta gives this just the sense of thinking that any idea of I, myself. And ahankar is atogri, hakshetra, sutaptavitaya, all the things by which we identify myself as a distinct, discrete individual. My home, my wife, my children, my country, my money, my, aham mama. So we could say that ahamta means I, sense of I, and ahankar means the sense of I and mine, I, me and mine. So Mayavadis, they want to become free from the sense of I. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult to get free from that. Theoretically, we can understand I'm not the body, but just ordinary things. When we become hungry, we feel it very strongly. If someone treads on our toe accidentally with some heavy boots, or we feel pain. So it seems very difficult to get free from the sense of I. When we are centered, the sense of I, not even the ego, but just even the body, when we see through these eyes from a particular, wherever the body is, the locus of our seeing is wherever the body is. So it seems to us that I am an individual who sees through these eyes. I hear whatever is within the range of these ears. When I touch, I feel something, or something touches me, or the heat, I feel the heat. So it seems very much as I am connected with this body. I am an individual. This is me. So to get free from that, one can theoretically understand I'm not the body. But the Mayavadis, they want to get, I'm not the body, I'm not anything. That's what they want to, and then they give the idea that, well, I'm not anything, then I'm God. I don't know how they get from one to the other, but like I say, I'm not trying to justify the Mayavadi philosophy, because I guess if you really wanted to understand it and refute it, you should study it fully. But there's hardly anyone these days who does that. And there are so many branches of Mayavada anyway, because there are so many inherent contradictions which they try to explain in different ways. So it's very difficult. Mentally or theoretically, we can think, well, there's no me. There's no I. That's very strong in Buddhism, where there's no I, there's no you, there's no anything else. There's nothing. And there's not really nothing either. Because if you say nothing, well, you have to think of that in relationship to something. So there's no existence, there's no non-existence. And there's no in-between either. So it all amounts to what Srila Prabhupada summed up in two words, word jugglery. It's not anything conceivable. And they say, yes, it's not conceivable. Why it should be like that, they can't say. So it's very difficult even to imagine that I don't exist. But the Vaishnavas, they don't try to get rid of ahamta or ahankar, but they try to get rid of that sense of thinking I am separate from Krishna. So instead of trying to stop the senses and trying to stop our identity, we rather try to apply that properly in Krishna's service, yuktam vairagyam. Understand that, yeah, I'm an individual, but I'm not the enjoyer of this world. I'm not the controller of this world. Just like the Mayavadis think, I don't have anything to do with this world. The devotees also understand, I don't have anything to do with this world. But as long as I'm in this world, I should try to do Krishna's, what Krishna wants in this world. He personally comes to this world to try to help others come to Krishna consciousness. So as long as I'm living in this world, I should try to come to Krishna consciousness and try to help others also within my capacity. So a devotee doesn't try to overcome the sense of I-ness, but the sense of that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Devotees overcome that, and not just by some theoretical consideration, but by serving Krishna, by serving the devotees, by trying to help non-devotees come to Krishna consciousness. They become humble servants. Instead of thinking, I am the great controller. Or then when one becomes disappointed, I am not anything to do with this world, I'm God. Instead of that, one doesn't negate the sense of I. Because I am meant to be a servant of Krishna. That means Krishna wants me to serve him. Krishna doesn't want me to avoid him by merging into some mysterious light. Krishna wants me to serve him. So a devotee humbly accepts that position. So a devotee's becoming devoid of ahankar. Or ahankar is translated as egoism, sometimes as pride. But a devotee, he becomes very humble and thinks, let me serve Krishna. And then that's his ahankar. Sometimes ahankar and abhiman, these words are used synonymously. So abhiman, that sometimes means conceit or one type of pride, but it also means sense of identification. So if one has the abhiman, these are words used in our, at least in our Gaudiya literature, the abhiman, or the sense that I am the servant of Krishna, that is pure and perfect and complete. Whereas if one has the abhimana, or the concept that I am an enjoyer of this world, or I am a renouncer of this world, both of them are imperfect. That I'm enjoyer of this world is completely wrong. That I'm a renouncer of this world, maybe somewhat better, but incomplete. And full, proper egoism is I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And that is our ahankar, that which makes me what I am, the understanding that I am the servant of Krishna. As for those who renounce this world without serving Krishna, they may be spiritually advanced in the sense that they have no material hankering. And they may become liberated. Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, at the end of the purport, he writes that of this verse that we're reading today, Krodhad Pavati Sammohaha, it is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada is paraphrasing a verse which he often quoted, Yenya Yirvindaksha Vimuktamaninas Tvayasta Bhavada Vishuddha Buddha Aruhya Kritrena Parang Padang Tataf Patantya Dhunadrita Yushmadangraha. Persons who neglect Krishna but desire to be liberated, they may become liberated, and they may think, I'm fully liberated. But they fall down again because they neglect Krishna. They're not fully liberated because they're not yukta vairagya. They're detached from the world, but they're not linked with Krishna. Vairagya is detachment, yukta means linking. So due to lack of linking with Krishna, they have no fixed basis, and then most of them will fall down again to this world. So their position is kleshadikatarastayasham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta higatir dukam dehavadbhyabhyate. The pursuing the impersonal path, very troublesome. Very, very troublesome. One may attain success, but after many lifetimes of trouble. We may say, Ramana Maharshi, he didn't seem to be very troubled. Then we can understand, because he had some flash of insight. That means he was cultivating this for many lifetimes. It doesn't happen to everyone. So he may have been through many lifetimes of troublesomely thinking or trying to become detached from the world. But for the devotees, it's very practical and very joyful. susukam kartam avyayam. They engage everything in Krishna's service, and that in itself is the source of all happiness. People want to become detached from this world because they find it so troublesome and they want to get relief from this world. But devotees, even the neophyte devotee, goes beyond the platform of the renounced non-devotee, because the renounced non-devotee, however advanced they become, they can only get to the zero position. If we see this material world is full of suffering, just it's a minus position. So they transcend the negative and come to the zero position. There's neither troubled by this material world nor active in any sphere. But devotees, they go immediately to the activity in devotional service, which is, they immediately become, start to link with Krishna. The Mayavadi might become linked with Krishna after many, many lifetimes. They might even get liberated and come back down again, still not get properly linked with Krishna. Whereas the neophyte devotee, even in the neophyte stage, is in a better position than the Mayavadi. And that's why even if someone who tries to renounce in Krishna's service, sincerely tries but doesn't make it, and they fall from that position, they're still in a better position than someone who is actually very advanced on the impersonal path and actually appears to be very detached. But that detachment, it doesn't have a strong basis. It can't last. Therefore, tyaktva swadharmam charanam bhujam haraya bhajanna pakvota patetato yadi yatrakva vabhadram abhud amushakim kovarta apto bhajatam swadharmata. What is the use? What actual gain is there? If one performs all one's activities within the Varnashram system very piously, but doesn't worship Krishna. On the other hand, there's no actual gain if you do so. On the other hand, if one gives up all those duties for the sake of worshiping Krishna, but is not fully successful in doing so, you don't lose anything. Of course, that's a little different to the Mayavadi, but the idea is the same thing. If you try to serve Krishna, but you don't immediately succeed, you don't lose anything by doing so. But if you don't try to serve Krishna and try to do something else, however laudable it might seem to be, you don't really gain anything. Aradhito yadi haris tapasatata kim. Naradhito yadi haris tapasatata kim. If one worships Krishna, there's no need to take up any severe austerities. On the other hand, if someone does do severe austerities and doesn't worship Krishna, you don't really gain anything. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? No. So another point is that to even take up this kind of severe renunciation, leaving the world, that can only be done by a few people. Shankaracharya, not the original, but the main propagator of Mayavad in this Kali Yuga in India, in his path, one has to be sannyasi to even begin spiritual life. But for the Vaishnavas, one can, from any situation, one can be female, which is not in Mayavadis, that's not possible. But female housewife, not showing any, or male doing some job or whatever, not showing any symptoms of the kind of detachment that the Mayavadis consider to be detachment, but one can be, because of cultivating the spirit of doing everything in Krishna's service, can be actually more advanced than a Mayavadi sannyasi, because properly situated, he's on the right path, he's properly renounced, whereas the Mayavadis then, however renounced they may be, it's not properly on track, and so it doesn't really help them get to where they should be going. They don't even want to go there. They don't want to go to Krishna. So their whole concept from the beginning is a mistake. All right. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.